Archaeology.
In the book, he and his co-author document how
mainstream archaeology, like every other thing, mainstream is out to lunch.
And their dating method is bunk.
And they have found human remains
that date back to periods that are multiplied
millions of years.
Also have evolved.
And then second hour we got media credit coming on.
I don't want to miss that.
Be good.
Aid.
So stick with us, guys.
We'll be right back after the break.
Mike Cremo.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is used to pay back consumer debt.
Because of financial problems, mostly from credit cards.
Approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on basic necessities such as mortgage, mortgage, and utilities.
And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain.
We are
We are very proud. The Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $250 million in credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond from Most Holy Family Monastery. We are now offering a critically important $10 package. The package contains three DVDs with 10 different programs, our new 658-page book called The Truth About What Really Happened to the Catholic Church After Vatican II, which is the most comprehensive book ever produced on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. You also get another 335-page book and other material. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. At the website, you can watch all of our videos for free, read sample chapters of the new book and other articles, or call us 24 hours a day at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or you can mail in your order to us at Most Holy Family Monastery, 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The price of the whole package is $10, which includes media mail shipping, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S. MostHolyFamilyMonastery.com.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Hey, welcome back to True Threats Radio, folks. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got a very interesting guest here on the line, Michael Cremo. It's always refreshing to get away from politics for a change, although Mr. Cremo has dealt a lot with politics himself because of his heretical discoveries. So with no further ado, let me bring up Mike Cremo.
Good to be with you and all your listeners, Charlie.
Yeah, great to have you. Love your book. Boy, that's great, the documented piece of work you put together there, you and your co-author. How many pages? What is it, 600-700 pages?
Well, if you're talking about the book Forbidden Archaeology, that's about 900 pages of archaeological evidence that contradicts the current theories of human origins.
What's your other book? Is that the condensed book you're talking, or do you have?
Well, I've got a few other books that.
Oh, didn't even know that.
The original book was Forbidden Archaeology, 900 pages, intended for basically an academic audience, although anybody can get through it. But we did bring out an abridged popular edition of the book called The Hidden History of the Human Race.
Yeah, I got that.
And then those books, they just deal with evidence that contradicts the current theories of human origin. So then people ask me, well, what alternative are you proposing? So that's the topic of my latest book, Human Devolution, which presents an alternative to Darwin's theory.
Wow, devolution. Yeah, I think you got that right. Isn't it sad, if man was evolving, you would think his morality would be keeping up with his intellect, wouldn't you?
Well, you would think so, but I think a reason for that is we're getting from the scientific establishment, who has a monopoly in the education system, a picture of who we are and where we came from that is totally materialistic. So then I think it's not very surprising that things have gone the way they have with human nature, because you know the goals that we set for ourselves individually and collectively are determined, you know, by, you know, by our sense of self, by the answers that we give to those questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? If I think I'm an American man, well, that's how I behave because that's my identity. But the answers that we've been getting from the scientific establishment through their monopoly in the education system all over this country are very materialistic answers to these questions. So I think it's not surprising that human nature has made the turn that it has.
You know, what do you think? Is it pride? Is it, you know, just sleazy politics? I guess it's probably a mixture of a lot of different things, but obviously you have been blackballed. I've had a lot of other, quote, heretic scientists on here talking about alternative views of cosmology, and it's the same across the board. Alternative archaeologists who have, I don't know if you've ever heard of David Roll, but, you know, he argues that the Egyptian chronology is off by several hundred years, and this has thwarted archaeological discoveries for the past 150 years.
So your question is why? Well, I think there's what I call a process of knowledge filtration that operates in the world of science. You know, you have a report of evidence. If they go along with the currently accepted theories, they'll pass through this filter very easily, which means people will read about this evidence in their textbooks in schools. They'll hear scientists talking about it on television. If they go to the local museum, they'll see the artifacts. But if you have evidence that radically contradicts the accepted theories, it tends to get filtered out, which means you're not going to read about it in the textbooks. You're not going to hear scientists talking about it on television. If you go to the museum, you're not going to see those artifacts, although they may be somewhere there in the museum collection, but they won't be shown to the public. So you may ask, as you did, well, why is this going on? I think there's a few reasons for it. One is, I think it's just human nature. Say if I love somebody, and then somebody tells me something bad about the person I love, at first I don't want to believe it. I won't accept it. So today's scientists, they're very much in love with their theory of evolution. And when they hear something that goes against it, they just don't want to believe it. They'll even become angry at the person who tries to tell them. And I think there's some deeper reasons as well that have to do with power. Now, there's different kinds of power in the world. There's economic power. There's political power. There's military power. There's also intellectual power, which is a very subtle power but a very real one. And it operates like this. If you're able to dictate to people the answers to these questions, who am I and where did I come from, you're able to influence the way that those people will act. You'll be able to influence the goals that they will set for themselves individually and collectively. So for
I hit the hammer, the nail on the head with the hammer there. It really is manipulation, isn't it? It's control. It's making a monkey out of man, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kind of like the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, yeah. And so we see this just permeating everywhere. And you know, I have to wonder, I don't think a great many scientists actually even agree with a lot of this bunk themselves. And on occasion, many of them have actually admitted that they know there's serious problems and that it's not really scientific, but it's the accepted paradigm. And so they just go along with it basically to keep their...
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I meet scientists like that all over the world. I mean, once, you know, I was invited to speak at the geology department of a major university at one of the Midwestern states, having to be a big oil-producing state. So they have a big department of geology at this big state university. And I was invited to go there and speak by one of the professors in the geology department. So I asked him, why did you invite me? Because from all external appearances, he would appear to be a pretty orthodox sort of scientist, accepting all the current theories and things like that. He told me that he had heard me speak on a late-night alternative science radio program. I won't mention the show, but you know, but there are a lot of them out there. You're one of them. And I think that's a great service that you're doing. You may not know who's listening to your show. It just so happened that this scientist was listening to one of these late-night shows, heard me talk about my work on it, and decided, hey, I'd like to have this guy come. Now,
wow.
Now I meet a lot of people like that, scientists in different universities and different scientific institutions around the world who, to all external appearances, look like they're completely orthodox in their viewpoint, but you dig a little deeper and you find they have some alternative ideas.
Wow. Yeah, they're out there. A lot of them are just afraid, and they might think that they're alone.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right about that. But that's I think that's a very positive sign in one sense, that there are people like that. It shows that there's something wrong with the current system. Of course, one thing to keep in mind is that there are many more scientists these days who are willing to speak out. They're forming alternative organizations to carry out their research, like the Scientific and Medical Network in England, where you have about 1,200 scientists and engineers who have banded together to do research that they can't do within their normal institutional frameworks. In this country, you have the Institute for Noetic Sciences, which was set up by one of our former astronauts to carry out research into the paranormal and different alternative topics. So you've got some of them who are willing to take a public stand, who are making alternative organizations. And then another thing to keep in mind is most ordinary people in the United States already agree with the kinds of things we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people don't accept the theory of evolution. Most people accept the existence of paranormal phenomena. They believe that it's possible to communicate with departed spirits and claim to have done it and things like that. So most people are already on the other side of the street from what the mainstream scientists are trying to tell them.
Yeah, we're leaving them in the dust. They're preaching to the wind. Nobody's basically listening anymore. So let them, if that's the way they want to be. Well, but you know, how can you have progress in society if you, you know, allow yourself to be hemmed in and stagnated and, you know, dragging this ball and chain around? I mean, literally, you should never let yourself be closed-minded. There's always something new to learn and discover, and it might take you in a completely different direction, but so be it.
That's yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right about that, Charlie. And I think one thing that would help, I mean, as you were mentioning on the top of your show, I'm not so much engaged in politics. I'm fighting another kind of war here. But I think there is a political element to it in this sense that, say, here in the United States, normally we wouldn't tolerate our government telling us you can only watch one television station, you can only listen to one radio show, you can only read one newspaper, you can only buy one kind of car and all that kind of stuff, because we believe in freedom and freedom of choice and things like that. However, today in our education system, we are tolerating our government telling us that our children can only be taught one idea about human origins, namely the Darwinian theory of human evolution. Now, it is a fact that most of the mainstream scientists accept that theory, and I think that's got to be recognized, and therefore I think that theory has some place in the education system. However, I do not think it has a right to a total monopoly whereby all other ideas are excluded from the curriculum. That's got to change.
Exactly. They have everybody's right to say what they want, but not to intimidate others and try to silence them so that their opinion becomes the accepted norm, because it's not accepted, and it's not norm. Anyway, guys, I'm going to take a short break. Stick with us. We'll be right back with Michael Cremo.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by doctors Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
Hey guys, welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host Charlie Giuliani. We've got Michael Cremo on as a guest. Had to go to the telephone during the break. Skype is acting up on me here again. Keep getting cut off. You still there, Mike, I hope?
Oh, I'm still here.
Okay, great. They're actually calling me on Skype, but I think I'm just going to stick with the phone thing. As long as you can hear me clear, right?
I can hear you. I hope your listeners can.
Yeah. Actually, you're not quite as loud. I better answer Skype. Wait a minute. All right. Try that. Is that. Can you hear me now?
I can still hear you.
Mike?
Can you hear me?
This is just crazy. Skype, it does this every once in a while, and when it does, it just keeps doing it. You know, it doesn't do it once, and then that's it. So we'll just stick with the phone. Anyway, so yeah, it's now I'm getting an echo. Back
well,
in the studio,
the
if there's some
echo,
way
the
that you can alleviate
time.
That.
I heard the echo quite a bit the first time.
Yeah. Okay, I think it's.
But
done.
You decide what to do. I think I'm also on Skype. If you want me to get on Skype.
No, I think we're all set now. Yeah,
okay.
I don't hear the echo. Are you hearing it?
Not now.
Yeah, I think we're all set. So let's talk about your your work that you've been doing and how it is actually that you got started doing this. Talk about your educational background. And do you actually have a quote, formal degree? Not that that means anything, but...
No. I mean, I've got an honorary PhD from a university in Europe, but, you know, sometimes I use that, sometimes I don't. But, no, I don't have an earned degree in archaeology. When I went to university, I went to the George Washington University in Washington, D.C., back in the 1960s, to the School of International Relations. So I studied international politics and foreign languages.
Oh, no kidding.
At that time, I was planning on a career in one of the diplomatic services or the intelligence services. But then I started looking around. I wasn't too happy with what I was learning in the universities. I didn't like the system that they had in place for learning. I didn't like what they were teaching. So I decided I wanted to look for my own path to truth. So that took me on quite a voyage to many different countries. And eventually I became very much attracted to the systems of yoga and meditation in India. And I found a teacher that I liked, one of the gurus, and through him I started studying the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. And in those writings, I learned about human civilizations that existed on Earth many millions of years ago.
That's actually a fascinating...
Those writings tell us that humans have existed since the very beginning of life on Earth, and that's also a message you find in the Bible, the Quran, practically every wisdom tradition in the world.
So I'm sure you know about the Vimana or another ancient technology.
Yeah, things like that. So... that's what really got me questioning what I'd always heard from my teachers in high school and university about human origins. So then my co-author, Richard Thompson, and I decided, well, if there's any truth to what these ancient writings are telling us, there should be some physical evidence to back it up. So I started doing some research, and at first I didn't think I was going to find very much. I thought, well, maybe I'll do, you know, a few weeks of research. I'll find a few interesting facts, and I'll write a short article about them, and I'll go do something else. But as I kind of got into it, I decided, well, let me start looking not just at the current textbooks of archaeology. Let me dig back to the original scientific reports of the past 150 years in all different languages, because somehow or other I've gotten a reading knowledge of most of the European languages like French, Russian, Italian, Spanish, German, so on and so forth. So I thought, let me look at the original scientific reports. And when I started doing that, I started noticing that archaeologists in various parts of the world had discovered many human bones, human artifacts, and human footprints that were tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of years old. And this is in the original scientific reports, although you don't see it mentioned in the textbooks.
Right.
So that 8 weeks of research that I originally planned to do turned into 8 months, and then the 8 months turned into 8 years because there was just so much of this material, enough to fill up a 900-page book of evidence of human skeletons tens of millions of years old, human artifacts tens of millions of years old, human footprints many millions of years old.
And so what they were doing is just locking this stuff away in a back room somewhere, not displaying it, not talking about it.
Right. You know, that's why we called the book Forbidden Archaeology, because, you know, if you consider archaeology to be like a big museum, what you'd find is that people are only allowed into one little room of that museum, and there they only see the stones and the bones that go along with the current theories. And what they don't know is there are many other rooms to that big museum of archaeology, rooms with locks on the doors. And so what I've tried to do in my work is take the locks off the doors, let people in and see what's really there.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting stuff. We've got to take another short break. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with Michael Cremo.
Safely You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hi, this is John Statler, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103. And let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Hey, welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. This is your host, Charlie Giuliano. We have Michael Cremo on. I'm trying the Skype thing again, folks. I'm hoping it holds out here. Mike, let's talk about some of the fascinating discoveries that don't have too much time here. Well, already halfway through this hour here with you, but summarize some of what you have found to be the best, most significant discoveries you've made that fly right in the face of mainstream academia, archaeology.
Well, one of my favorite discoveries is the California gold mine discoveries. Back in the gold rush days, miners went to California to get the gold. And to get the gold, they were digging tunnels into the sides of mountains, like Table Mountain in Tuolumne County in the Sierra Nevada Mountains of California. And deep inside these tunnels, the miners were finding human skeletons, not those of ape men, but of humans like us, along with many human artifacts. And these discoveries occurred not just in one mine, but in many mines in the gold mining region. So these discoveries were collected by Dr. J.D. Whitney, who was the chief geologist of California. Mount Whitney is named after him. And he wrote a massive report about these discoveries that was published by Harvard University in the year 1880. And what's really amazing about these discoveries to me is that they were found in layers of rock about 50 million years old. So that is far longer than most scientists now think it's possible for human beings to have existed. According to the current theories, human beings like us came into existence only about 100,000 or 200,000 years ago. So to have this evidence that human beings were existing 50 million years ago is really quite amazing. Now, why don't we hear about this evidence anymore today? It's because of this knowledge filtering process I was mentioning. There was another scientist who existed, who was living at the same time as Whitney, Dr. William Holmes, who was at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. So he was in a more influential position. So what he said was, well, if Dr. Whitney had understood the theory of human evolution, he wouldn't have published that report. In other words, because the facts did not support the dominant theory of evolution, those facts had to be put aside. Now, some of those artifacts from the California gold mines are still in the collection of the Museum of Anthropology at the University of California at Berkeley. And a couple of years ago, I was a consultant for a TV show called The Mysterious Origins of Man. That was hosted by Charlton Heston. It was shown on NBC. And when they were making that program, I told them they should go to that museum to film those artifacts, but the museum officials refused to allow them to do that. And of course, those artifacts, they aren't shown to the public. They're not even kept in the museum itself. They're kept in a storage building several miles from the museum. So what you've got here is a perfect example of the knowledge filtering process that I'm talking about. You've got these discoveries, these genuine discoveries that were made and reported to the scientific world by a professional scientist, Dr. J.D. Whitney. His report was published by Harvard University, but you'll never see these things mentioned today because of this process of knowledge filtering. And if it was just one case like that, well, maybe you could understand it, but what I've shown in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, is that there are hundreds of these cases, and we could talk about more of them if you've got time. Okay. So let's look at another case like this from more recent times. In the 1970s, some American archaeologists were conducting some excavations at a place called Hualaco, which is near the city of Puebla in central Mexico. And in these excavations, they uncovered some human artifacts of the kind that archaeologists say that are made by humans like us, not by any kind of ape man. So, of course, the archaeologists wanted to know how old these things were. So they brought in a team of geologists to date the site to tell them how old those artifacts were. So one of the archaeologists was Virginia Steen McIntyre, who I know personally, of the United States Geological Survey. And she and her colleagues used four different methods to date that site, and they got an age of 300,000 years. So the archaeologist said, that's impossible. Human beings capable of making those artifacts didn't exist anywhere in the world 300,000 years ago. They hadn't evolved yet. So the archaeologists refused to publish the age for the site given by their own hand-picked team of geologists. Now, when Virginia Steen McIntyre independently published the true age of the site, 300,000 years, she got in big trouble for it. She lost a teaching position that she held at a university in the United States. So this is how this knowledge filtering process operates in archaeology. And there are many other cases that I could tell you about if we've got the time. How are we doing?
It's just fascinating because, I see this across the board going on in every field. You know, every field has their biases that you must adhere to, and if not, there's just no place for you. You will never get anywhere.
Well,
I don't care what it is. Pick any random field out of your hat. And it's really disgusting. But you pay all that money, spend all that time, in some cases 8, 12 years, getting your degree, and when you come out of there, you're so intellectually constipated that you will never be able to contribute anything significant to your field. All you're going to do is be a parrot the rest of your life and regurgitate the same guff that they stuff down your throat. I mean, it really sickens me. It's pathetic.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Charlie, that you should mention that, because it reminds me of an experience that I had. Once I was in South Africa, I was speaking at a university, and it happened that the students were on vacation. So my audience was about 100 professors from the different science departments. Excuse me. And after the talk, you know, I was kind of standing around, and one of the professors came up to me, looked around and said to me, he said, you know, Mr. Cream, I'm glad you gave that talk. And what you're talking about, this knowledge filtering process, it's not just happening in archaeology. You know, it's happening in my field, biology. And he said, I'll tell you about it. He gave me some examples, and then he walked away. And then another professor walked up to me, kind of looked around, made sure nobody was nearby listening, and said, yeah, Mr. Cremo, yeah, this knowledge filtering process you're talking about, it's operating in my field, physics. And let me tell you about it. And then he walked away. And a few minutes later, then another guy walked up, you know, a chemist. He said, you know, this knowledge filtering process you talked about, it's operating in my field, chemistry. And let me tell you about it. Jeez. So I think it's exactly like you say.
You know, I had a psychiatrist on.
I've run into it, too.
An alternative psychiatrist on, and he was saying that the whole thing is geared around medicine, getting people on medication because it's big, big, big money.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
And so they make up these fictitious, you know, these fairy tales that they themselves, a good many of them anyway, don't even believe in. But in order to keep the job and keep the machine turning, you know, and to get the maximum amount of people on the drugs, and a lot of times they don't need drugs. The drugs even make cases worse. I mean, a lot of these drugs have been associated with, you know, suicide. But again, it's all in the name of the big profit.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean, most universities now, they've turned into big research consortiums where you have, of course, it used to be 20 years ago it was physics. Now it's biomedical science, where all the billions of dollars of research money are coming through.
Right.
So you've got, basically, they've turned into consortiums where you have the university in partnership with the government and these big pharmaceutical companies and other kinds of companies investing in this research. And basically what you're doing when you're getting your PhD, which takes about 7 or 8 years, is you are cheap labor for their research lab. That's what you're basically doing.
Yeah. And not to keep going off on this tangent, but this one gets me. The psychiatrist is the first one that will tell you, oh, stay away from the bottle. It doesn't get rid of your problems. It just drowns them out. It makes them worse. But then they'll put you on the dope, you know, which does the same thing.
Yeah. But this kind of thing, it really does, you know, operate in archaeology. And I think because of that, we don't have a complete set of facts with which to make our decisions about these, you know, very important questions. Who are we? Where did we come from? Because the way it works is when you go to school, you know, you open up your anthropology textbook or your archaeology textbook, and you see a certain number of facts listed. Then you see the theory that they propose. And then the facts go along with the theory, so you think it must be true. The problem is you're not getting all the facts when you open up that textbook. You're just getting a carefully selected
right.
set of facts that go along with the current theories. And one thing that I found is I've traveled around the world because I've spoken at many universities. I've spoken at leading scientific institutions like the Royal Institution in London, the Russian Academy of Sciences in Moscow, other places like that. And what I find that students of archaeology are often very amazed that there's such a huge body of evidence that they've never even heard of before, not even to be spoken of negatively. I mean, the knowledge filtering process has just worked so perfectly that they're absolutely unaware of the kind of evidence that I've presented, like a couple of cases I just mentioned. So they're often very amazed, you know, that such evidence exists. It's sort of like like in that film, The Planet of the Apes, they had the ape archaeologists who went out to the Forbidden Zone and found, you know, this evidence that humans existed before, you know, the apes, which, yeah, which kind of contradicted the whole theory of ape origins that,
right,
the official scientists had on that planet. So I think it's something going on our planet, you know, now, that there's this forbidden zone, that there's this, which I call forbidden archaeology, where there are so many archaeological discoveries that contradict, you know, the current theories. And they continue to be made up to the present day, but scientists just refuse to recognize them, or they come up with any possible way to explain the evidence away. For example, in the 1970s, Mary Leakey, who was the wife of Louis Leakey, one of the most famous archaeologists of the 20th century, found dozens of footprints at a place called Laetoli, in
right,
the country of Tanzania in East Africa. And in her original report, which was published in National Geographic magazine, Mary Leakey said, these footprints are exactly like modern human footprints, but they're found in layers of rock over 3 million years old, which is millions of years before scientists generally think that humans like us came into existence. So then you've got to ask, well, how did she explain those footprints then? So her idea was, well, there must have been some kind of ape man who existed 3 million years ago, who had feet exactly like modern human feet. Now, that's possible, I suppose, but there's no physical evidence to support that idea. You know, we've got skeletons of the ape men that existed at that time. They're called Australopithecus.
Yeah.
And the foot structure of Australopithecus is not like that of a modern human being. It's got very long toes. The first toe, the big toe, can move out to the side like a human thumb. And it's perfectly obvious that that creature did not have a foot exactly like a modern human foot. Actually, the only creature known to science today that has a foot exactly like a modern human foot is a human being like us.
Yeah.
So the evidence is right there, but they just do anything possible to explain it away.
I remember the National Geographic article that covered that on the front cover. They pictured, you know, there was a painting of the scene that made these footprints. You had normal-looking rabbits. Normal-looking lions or whatever, you know, in the background. And then you had ape-like humans.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, because, see, that's one of the things that's amazing about this set of discoveries is that you've got dozens of footprints, three trails, actually. So in that painting, they showed the father ape, the mother ape, and the little child ape man, who looked very ape-like, but they showed them with these very, very human-like feet. Now, that's complete fantasy, because all they had was the footprints, which are completely modern. They're no different than the footprints that you or I would make on a beach today. And any foot bones that they have from skeletons of ape men that existed at that time are not like modern human feet. So it's that picture was a complete fantasy that was just meant to explain away the fact that those footprints are completely human, which meant that painting should have been drawn in another way. It should have shown humans like us walking around at that time.
Right. So, you know, we obviously are dealing here with deliberate twisting. Very subtle. Most people wouldn't catch it. But, you know, they're portraying something as fact. That again, it's just fantasy. There's nothing scientific about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you must have gotten some vehement attacks. I'm not sure if you were talking about this at all already.
Sure, you're right about that. Yeah, and I expected it because, you know, my book was pretty controversial. What I was surprised, however, is that basically there were three kinds of reactions. I expected only one kind of reaction, the extremely negative reaction. For example, Richard Leakey, you know, he said, your book is pure humbug. Nobody would take it seriously but a fool, and, you know, like that. So that's what I thought was going to be the only reaction. But it turns out that the scientific world is not monolithic. I found that the reactions to my work broke down into three categories. You had that first category of these, what I call the fundamentalist Darwinist response, as exemplified by Richard Leakey saying your book is pure humbug. Yeah, that's one reaction. But there's another group within the scientific world that's a little more open-minded. They may not necessarily agree with me, but they're open-minded enough to consider, well, possibly their ideas might be wrong, and they're willing to listen to evidence that contradicts it and then try to think about it and make some decision. And then among that group, there are some who actually agree with me. Now, many of those scientists who actually agree with me are scientists who have been victims of this knowledge filtering process themselves, like Virginia Steen McIntyre. You know, when she went down to that site in Mexico, she just did her work as a geologist. She came up with an age of 300,000 years. She didn't know that was forbidden in terms of the archaeological theories. You know, so.
Right. Tell you what, we got another commercial. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Attention gardeners, if you've ever wanted to grow the absolute best tasting fruits and vegetables imaginable, well, here's exciting news. There's a new product called ProtoGrow, and it's dynamite in the garden. ProtoGrow is a bioactive superfood for plants. It works by providing true broad spectrum nutrition, allowing plants to achieve their full genetic expression. So what does this mean in the garden? It means mouth-watering fruits and vegetables, brilliantly colored flowers, herbs that finally grow to medicinal strength, blue ribbon garden produce jam-packed with bioavailable minerals and trace elements, giant pumpkins, even high-potency Hybrix wheatgrass. ProtoGrow is a proprietary blend of full-spectrum nutrients from the sea. It literally contains the basic building blocks of life itself. In fact, ProtoGrow is so effective at producing rapid plant growth in record time that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. To grow tasty fruits and vegetables right now, go to growlikecrazy.com or call 877-327-0365.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 3 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
Okay, welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Michael Cremo on the line. Boy, the hour has gone by pretty fast, and we haven't even scratched the surface. I tell you what, before we go on to anything else, if there's anything else you wanted to cover, why don't you quickly plug if you got a website or anything that you wanted to...
Oh, okay. Yeah, if any of the listeners want to learn more about my work, order books, things like that, they can visit my website, www.mcremo.com, M-C-R-E-M-O. And they'll also find a museum of forbidden archaeology on the site and travel diary, things like that, upcoming media events, things like that.
Great. So tell me, I'm curious, have you ever been allowed to actually see any of these artifacts? I mean, some of them, you know, go back to the 19th century.
Yes, I have. I have been able to get in to see some of them. For example, the California gold mine discoveries that we were talking about earlier. You know, I mentioned that when I was a consultant for an NBC television special that the producers of that show weren't allowed to go in and see them. But later, I was preparing a report about these discoveries for the World Archaeological Congress, which is the world's largest international organization of archaeologists. So perhaps because of my connection with the World Archaeological Congress, the museum officials decided to let me personally go in to see them and photograph them, which I was able to do. So sometimes, yes, I do get in to see these things that are not shown to the public generally.
Interesting. And, you know, do you ever ask them, do they ever offer a reason why these particular items? I mean, it's obvious why, but do they ever try to make light of it, you know, as to why they're not displaying these?
Well, for example, when Bill Cote, who was the television producer, first went to the Museum of Anthropology at the University of California, Berkeley, they told him, oh, you're making a television program. You probably have a very tight deadline. We just wouldn't have time to have our staff go search through our collection to find these things for you. But he told them, well, we've got 6 months to do the program. Could you have a look? And then they said, well, we have another problem. This isn't part of the normal duties of our staff. We would have to pay them overtime to do it. We have a very tight budget. We just can't afford to do it. And Bill Cote told them, well, I'll pay the overtime for the workers, and I'll pay all the expenses. Could you please have a look? And finally, they just told them no. Now, so that's one of the kinds of reactions that you get. But usually what happens is that if you want to look at things that are in a collection that aren't shown to the public, you need permission from the museum directors. And they usually ask you to make a proposal in which you explain your research goals, who you are, what your affiliations are, and what your credentials are, and things like that. So that's one way that they are able to screen out, you know, people that they think, you know, might not be what they would regard as serious researchers. And then another case is the bones or artifacts may be under the control of particular scientists who discovered them, who don't want even other archaeologists and anthropologists to get a look at them before they've had a chance to put out their own points of view.
Right. Well, I wish we had more time. I wanted to go into some more detail about some of your other finds, but unfortunately...
Well, maybe some other time. I'd love to come back sometime.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully Skype won't be giving us any trouble then. But, yeah, thanks for coming on. And, yeah, definitely, I'll give you a call again sometime. We can spend some more time on this.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Get in touch with Lori, and who set up this in the first place, and then we'll do it again. Sure.
You bet. All right, take care. Stick with us, folks.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back with... Mr. Kincaid talking about the media. Stick with us.
It's true. Go.